This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Ask pet owners and scientists, pets make our lives happier and healthier. Studies have shown that pets lower blood pressure, decrease your chances of having a heart attack, can enhance your community interactions, and make you smile. But did you know that even your indoor cat and canine companion that only cruises the neighborhood are sentinels for world health? My guest is Dr. Megan Mahaffey. She's a research ecologist with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's Office of Research Development. We'll discuss how you can become a citizen scientist and help safeguard the health of pets, people, the ecosystem, our economy, and the planet. We'll be right back after this short break.
If you've ever shared your home and heart with a charmingly naughty animal who's always up to mischief, you'll fall in love with the Klepto Kitty who stars in Talk to the Paw by Melinda Metz. Talk to the Paw is a funny, heartwarming novel about a single girl, a single guy, and MacGyver, an adorable tabby cat with a not-so-adorable habit of stealing from the neighbors. Talk to the Paw is on sale now everywhere books are sold. Visit kensingtonbooks.com for more info.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Mahaffey, this is just an absolute pleasure, and I'm really impressed that the EPA is interested in what little dogs and cats are doing.
Well, thank you for having me, Bernadine. It's just a real pleasure that you were interested in our survey and are having me on your show.
Well, I think a lot of people, typically when they tune in, they're hearing me talk to a veterinarian, a behaviorist, somebody who seems to be more in the animal veterinary realm. Tell us a little bit about you.
Sure. So I grew up in a pretty small town, about 1,000 people. So it was a lot of nature, a lot of agriculture, and I grew up surrounded by pets. I had dogs and cats, horses, chickens, and it was one point I was even working with my family to raise catfish. So I'm very familiar with animals, but I guess my background was more focused on the agricultural side of things. And I went, and when I graduated from high school, I went on to Murray State, where I took my horse Freckles with me and started looking into agricultural sciences as a study. And then I carried that on through my master's degree. And then finally, with my PhD, I decided I wanted to combine my agricultural background with my interest in protecting the environment. And so I started looking at ways to research how the environment and other agricultural interactions affect things like water quality, soil quality, and air quality. After I finished my PhD, I took a postdoctoral position with EPA, and then later that transitioned into a permanent position at EPA, where I've been working for the past 20 years looking at relationships between the environment and how that influences the water we drink and the air we breathe and the food that we grow.
I think with EPA, most people, myself, you know, I'm a suburbanite, and I think, okay, it's going to be air quality and what the cars are doing, and don't really get down to that finer level of, yes, you know, what happens in in Southern California, what happens in the Sierra and the snowpack and even fires now, how that can be affecting water quality and what's going to happen to me hundreds of miles away or even more than that. So thank you for doing this. My health appreciates it, and I know the world appreciates it.
Thank you.
I was reading in one of my veterinary journals, came across an article talking about the National Pet Health Survey and EPA, and it caught my attention. I thought, wow, this is really something different. Tell me a little bit and tell the listeners about the National Pet Health Survey and why it's important.
Sure. So the National Pet Health Survey is a short online, about 6-minute survey that's about companion pets, the environment that they live in, the behavior that they go through, and their health. And anyone who has access to a computer or a tablet or even a smartphone can take this survey online, so we can reach a large number of people this way. The survey was developed to explore pet health in relationship to their environment and exposures and potentially extrapolate that to human health, because at EPA, one of our big missions is looking at how the environment affects not just water quality and air quality, but how those also interplay with human health. And the intent of the survey was to shed light on health and disease issues to both pets and people across the U.S.
What I found interesting, because I took the survey last night, and you're right, it is really quick. I was fascinated with the questions and definitely want to get into that a little bit with you as to the types of questions. And it wasn't anything like, oh, okay, now I'm going to have to do some research and pull out my pet's records. It's like just things you inherently knew what was going on with your pet. You can take it multiple times, the survey. So if you have multiple pets, you take the survey multiple times, easy enough to do. But why is it just cats and dogs are the focus of this survey right now? Why not your pet bird or your horse that you took to school with you?
So we started with dogs and cats because they make up over half of the total household pets in the U.S., and we figured we could reach a large audience that could provide us feedback on the health of their companions that share the environment with them. The other thing is that dogs and cats, we tend to incorporate more into our environment in the sense that they eat and drink and sleep in the same houses as we do, and they experience the same yards and explore the natural areas and the parks that we go to, because we'll often take them with us. And then because of their interactions with us, we expect that they might be seeing some of the same kind of exposures, whether it's from the water or from the dust that they take in when they dig in the yard.
This was really fascinating because it seemed like what you were looking for, how is that going to affect my health? But go on.
Yeah, so the idea is that the pets that we live with have a shorter lifespan and they're smaller size in general. Obviously, there are some larger dogs, but their response time for health impacts and diseases in pets is often shorter than what we might be seeing in humans, and they might offer a faster insight into health trends that we would have to wait a longer period of time potentially to see in humans. The other thing is that we might use them, as you commented, as sentinel type, where you might be seeing exposures, say, from the forest fires that we've been seeing in the West, where you start seeing respiratory illnesses in your pets. And this might help to alert doctors in that area to look for similar types of illnesses in vulnerable populations, such as the elderly or children.
What was work that was your catalyst for getting into this? Because there are so many different areas that EPA could be focused on. And with some of the budgetary restraints that have been placed on EPA, it seems like this has to be fairly high in your list, your priorities to say, yes, we are going to focus on this survey. You know, we're being cut other places, but this was important. What made you feel that this was important to look into?
So we thought this was one, the nice part about this type of a survey is that it's not all that cost intensive, and it has a fairly low burden as far as input from the people that are doing the survey itself. And for us, the catalyst that we were seeing was that there was quite a bit of research in the One Health area, which is basically this concept that humans and animals share an environment, and our safety and our health are interrelated with the animals that we share that space with. And we involve the pets. So, for example, we influence our pets by the care that we give them and the places we go and the homes that we live in. And they influence us by the comfort that they provide and where they go and the work that they do. And unfortunately, sometimes in the diseases that we share. And one of the things that we're often looking for as scientists is data that we can use to actually explore the relationships between the environment and health. Unfortunately, it sometimes is difficult to get health data to make those kind of linkages. And so this was a way that we could collect a lot of data, involve the public in the citizen science project, and do it at a fairly low cost and low burden.
It was fascinating because it was a few months ago, I interviewed a scientist, a veterinarian. She is working in Arizona, and we were talking about valley fever and how valley fever, this fungal disease, affects dogs and cats. And then it was about a week or two later, I was listening to an NPR program, and they were talking about valley fever and how it's really ramped up a lot, and we're seeing it in people going, yes, there is definitely this interplay between people health and animal health. When you were talking about the One Health initiative, you are not just EPA working alone. Who are you working in conjunction with for this survey?
So that's a good question, because obviously my background is not in veterinary medicine. It's in ecology.
But you know a lot, I'm sure.
Yeah. So I grew up with pets, so I'm very familiar with pets and interactions and the diseases that they come in contact with, either through the mosquitoes or our ticks and things like that. But we did want to bring in people who were across different fields. And one of the other concepts of the One Health is to try and bridge some of those gaps between the different fields of study. So we reached out to people both internally and externally that were epidemiologists, that were toxicologists, and obviously veterinarians. We in particular reached out to Dr. Cheryl Stroud, who heard about our effort and became very interested in it, and she's the director of the One Health Commission. And the One Health Commission has been helping with developing the survey as well as hosting the survey on their site. And then they will also be hosting some of the feedback loop information like fact sheets and results from some of the data that we've been collecting.
You're talking about this survey, and I think it might be fascinating for the listeners to know, what are some of the questions that you're asking? Because, again, going to the survey myself, going, huh, how is that going to help them? How is that going to do any difference? So, yes, you want to know, is it a cat or a dog? But zip code, okay? So that gives you an idea of where conditions these people are answering. But why do you want to know about things like whether or not you put flea control on your pets?
Yeah, so the questions that are on there are common illnesses. That's the kind of the first cut that we did of both humans and pets that you might see in both, like cancers, diabetes, asthma, and tick-borne illnesses. Part of the questions that we're including, like preventative treatment as well as things like demographics, are to kind of look at maybe confounding variables about where age might be an influence or the type of preventative treatment that you might be using, or they might also be exacerbating influences for diseases that you might be seeing when you have, you're including pesticides on the dogs as well as pesticides in your home and outside your house.
And something like being neutered or not?
Again, that's a variable that we need to know about, you know, the health of the animal and potentially a confounding variable if it's affecting hormones within the pet, and that might be affecting the response with those pets.
I definitely have the reputation at my practice of being the fat police doctor. And I was interested to see that one of the questions on the survey was whether or not your pet is obese. And I think that is going to probably have less than a true response, because sadly, so many people don't realize that their pets are overweight. And I have a feeling they don't realize it. Probably they are overweight. So it's kind of the new normal, that fuller size of the American population and pet population. So hopefully that gets some of that, the answers across that. Yes, we are a society that is expanding.
Yes. So, yeah, and obviously with a survey of this type, we can't really control for some of that stuff. We're trying to get a large volume to actually get at some of the trends and maybe use a screening of where we might see some of that. We do ask if they put in a particular weight for their pet and potentially the type of breed, so we can maybe look at some of that in relationship to it. But no, I mean, the pet may be overweight and we may not have that actual diagnosis for that. But the idea is that if we can get information, so like on obesity, we might be able to relate that to other things that we've been collecting within the project that I'm closely involved with, which is the EnviroAtlas, where we look at where there's green space available in the area. So things like trees can provide benefits because it can help with getting out and exercising or viewing nature. So if you can find relationships there, we might be able to help look at some of the causes and associations between things like obesity and access to green space.
I love the picture that you sent in so people can go to our website and see a photo of you. And I believe that you're in front of your computer, or it's a screen at least, and it shows one of these looks like an atlas. So I have a feeling this is one of the EnviroAtlas that you're talking about. That's really fascinating how it is information that's accessible to just citizens, and we can go on and learn about our environment.
Right. Yes. And that the image behind me is one of the many. We have probably over 300 different types of variables that we put on our map. People might be familiar with something like Google Earth. So this mapping application operates somewhat like that, except we have compiled the metrics that might be of interest for ecosystem services, which is the concept that we get benefits from nature, like green space, because they not only provide the places for us to go and picnic, but they also provide filtration maybe for pollutants from cars, and they also provide filtration for runoff from your backyard, so it keeps it out of the water.
It is absolutely fascinating. So what are some of the other questions that are on this survey that people might not think, why are they asking that?
Well, we have questions that are about the age of your house. We have questions that are about the time that you spend outdoors with your pet. There are questions about the whether or not they sleep on furniture. And then we have questions about the types of food and water sources that they have. And these are all places where certain exposures could be influencing the health of the pet, whether by, you know, just going out and exercising or actually being exposed to something, say, like algal bloom issues in water, or where there's Giardia in water if they're going to nature park areas, where they might be getting exposed because of their intake from a source that's not a controlled drinking water source.
Well, it is absolutely fascinating. And again, this is just very short. The link will be on our site so people can go to it. Takes less than 10 minutes to do this. And speaking of a little timeout, we're going to take a short break right now. We'll be right back with Dr. Megan Mahaffey. She is, again, a research ecologist with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency Office of Research Development. We'll be talking about ways that your pet can help the world. Be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
I love cleaning the litter box, said no one ever. Luckily, there's World's Best Cat Litter, the litter that promises less mess with less litter. Only World's Best Cat Litter uses the concentrated power of corn to quickly trap odors in tight clumps. And quick clumping means you never have to chisel or scrape the box. Less cleanup with less wasted litter? That's a litter bit amazing. Save $2 on World's Best Cat Litter. Visit www.saveonworldsbest.com.
Oh, sure. It's all fun and games until someone ends up in a cone. That's right. We're animals. Deal with it. Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Mahaffey, you've been at this survey now for how long?
So it's been about 6 weeks, I think, that we have been collecting data. It went out, I believe, in October of this year. And we have, I would say, close to 2,000 responses so far.
Oh, wow. And have you been able to see any types of trends so far? What are some of the early results?
So some of the early results that we're seeing, which I think is really interesting, is that we're not just getting responses from urban areas. We're getting responses from both rural and suburban areas. And as a matter of fact, suburban areas make up over half of the responses that we've been getting. But we will get a gradient because we do have urban and rural areas where we're getting responses from pet owners, which is great. We're seeing that people seem to take very good care of their pets. They seem to go in for routine vaccinations pretty much across the board. About 82% of the pets are receiving their routine vaccinations. 92% of the pets so far have gone in for spay or neutering. Only about 13%, since you asked about the overweight part of it, have said that they considered their pets overweight. So we are getting some people that are saying, yes, their pets are actually overweight. And we had probably the most common illness that we're seeing, maybe not surprisingly, is dental illnesses, because people tend to not think about their pets for brushing their teeth. And the health issue that's probably second to that is bone and joint issues, and that particularly relates to the age of the pet, with eye issues being next.
Well, if I'm going to put in my 2 cents worth being the veterinarian, number one is you take the survey because you're wanting to fill it out as accurately as you can. How do you know if your pet's overweight? You see the kid every day, and sometimes it's hard to tell because it's just your pet. That's the way it's always looked. And I've had too many people say that, you know, well, my dog's not fat, because when I go to the dog park, there's a lot of dogs that are fatter than mine. And my usual response is, if you want to look skinny, have fat friends. So the best way to tell is your pet, cat or dog, overweight is put your hand somewhat flat on the side of your pet's chest where the ribs are. And with a little bit of pressure, and that's the operative word, little bit, you should be able to feel the ribs. If you have to push down a bit and you're pushing something out of the way, what you're pushing out of the way is likely fat. If you don't have a waistline on your pet, and some pets have more pronounced waistlines than others, but if it doesn't have a waistline, yep, your pet's overweight. So cut back on those treats. And then dental disease, thank you for bringing that up. Just flip the lip. Don't just look at the teeth that are up in front. They usually look pretty good. But pull that lip towards the ear, not opening their mouth, but just pull that lip up towards your ear, exposing those molars in the back. And if they look really dark brown, there's a lot of junk that's built up on them, almost looks like concrete, yep, it needs to have its teeth cleaned. So look for that. There are multiple surveys, Dr. Mahaffey, that people have taken in the past, some online, however. Why is this one different?
So I think probably one of the biggest differences and benefits of this survey is that we're collecting a really large amount of data. We're looking to collect over 300,000 survey responses for this survey. And it's not a targeted survey, so we're not looking for a specific issue, or we're not looking at a specific breed for doing the study. We kind of want to make sure we're covering the whole gamut and maybe seeing if we can use it as a screening tool for looking at spatial differences across the U.S. And the second difference is that the scope of the survey includes things that are not just disease-related, but also pet behaviors as well as environmental conditions that the pets are exposed to. And finally, the survey will provide large amounts of information about geographic differences. So a lot of the health data that we've seen has been either at the county or state level. We're trying to drive this down to a slightly finer scale at the zip code level, and then also look at the rural and urban gradients and the occurrence of those common health issues and diseases, and see if we can pair those with ecological variables from our project, the EnviroAtlas, to look at linkages to the environmental condition. And we realize that, you know, not everybody who's going to be filling this out is an expert, and I appreciate you helping them understand the concept of obesity so that, but we do know that people are very aware of their pets and aware of their health issues, and so we feel like we can get a larger quantity of information. It may not be, you know, a diagnostic answer for the issue that the pet has, but this way we're getting large volumes of information from folks who have a vested interest in the health of their pets.
So us learning about our pets is going to be very important. But I know you're trying to make this a one health issue. So how do you see that this is again going to relate? How is it going to benefit the public?
So I think the public, what the public will be getting from this is looking at how the environment around us influences both the human health and as well as the pets within the same environment.
Okay, so one of the questions was cancer. So in theory, we may be able to see areas that have a higher incidence of cancer than you would expect for the general pet population. And would it then be possible to see if there's a increase in the cancer risk for humans?
We could certainly can't do a straight cause and effect for those, because we know that it's not a one-to-one corollary for a lot of the diseases that pets have and that humans have, and the way that they respond can be different. But we do think that there would be enough to look at a more targeted set of questions if we're actually seeing clusters of information or clusters of diseases in particular areas to try and investigate what might be causing those relationships. And then also look into seeing if there's similar information that we could collect from human health surveys that might be going on in that same area.
And I love the fact, as you were saying, that our pets live such a condensed lifespan as compared to ours, that oftentimes you will see changes going on in them before you see it actually showing itself in the human population.
Yes, so we do think that they could be potential sentinels for issues that might be taking place in that area and things that we can consider to look into for targeting areas that might be affecting the humans in that area as well. But, you know, obviously we can't say for sure what that is until you do a more in-depth research on the human health and the exposures that they're being exposed to, I suppose.
With this type of information, I'm sure that once you start asking certain questions and surveys, it's like, oh, but I really want to ask this one also. Are there any plans for further surveys in the future?
Yeah, so a lot of it will depend on what we see when we get done with this one. We're going to have to wait and find out if what we've asked is actually giving us any signal at all across the spatial United States in this case. And if we do see differences, we would probably want to follow up with some more targeted questions, whether it's about respiratory illness or obesity issues or about linkages to nearby water sources or things like that so that we could do a finer scale targeting. But it will depend on what we see actually coming out of this survey.
Well, I think it is fabulous that the U.S. EPA has decided that they want to look into animal health and that animal health, the one world, one health, one medicine, how they're all intertwined with each other. Is there anything else that you'd like to tell the listeners about this survey other than it's quick, it's easy, definitely do it, and the link is up on our site? Why should they do it again?
So I think people would be interested in seeing how their location compares to others. I think most people are very concerned about the safety of their environment and the safety of their health. And given that some of the research is showing the linkages between the environment that we're experiencing and the health conditions both pets and their companion humans are experiencing, that this will help push some of the science forward for looking at those kinds of relationships. And it gets them involved in the idea of science, even if, you know, there's no strong conclusions that we can pull out of this in the end. Getting people involved in science and moving science forward and getting them to understand these linkages is a really important concept and a way to educate and get everybody engaged in protecting the safety of our environment and protecting their health.
Megan, do we have to wait as a public for this survey to be totally done to get your 300,000 responses? Or as that information is being gathered, will we be able to kind of see, okay, people in Milwaukee are seeing such and people in Denver are seeing another type of, you know, what are the raw numbers? Do we get to see those?
Yes. So the first round will be like fact sheet type feedbacks about the types of responses that we're seeing and the number of responses that we're seeing. But the idea is eventually that we'll be posting some of these results onto the EnviroAtlas website and then onto the mapping application so people can actually see how they differ between one place and the other. And I know that, you know, other surveys have already seen that some states are showing slightly different amounts of illnesses across the United States. So they can see how their responses are in compared to others and where we're seeing more responses compared to other places, and hopefully get them engaged in those places where we're not seeing responses, to get them to actually get engaged as well and giving us some feedback on their pets.
People always want to talk about their pets. People always want to feel as though they're helping. And this is such a great, easy way to get involved, to be that scientist, to have an impact on what's happening in world health. One individual kitty, one individual dog can make a difference when we put all of ourselves together. Dr. Mahaffey, this is just really, I think, exciting. I hope that all my listeners, as soon as they finish listening to this podcast, will go to our website, see your link, go to it, fill out this quick, easy survey, and give you and all of us some great answers and some great links.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you having me on the show, and this has been a lot of fun. And please, yes, go fill out the survey. Help us out. We really appreciate it.
And take a look at your EnviroAtlas.
Yes, please take a look at the EnviroAtlas. It's a free public website. Anybody can get the data, as well as just the mapping application itself, so that if they are interested in what we're doing there, go to the website and look around.
Well, this is Dr. Bernadine Cruz. You've been listening to The Pet Doctor, and I've been chatting with Dr. Megan Mahaffey, research ecologist with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's Office of Research Development. If you have any questions on how you can be that best possible pet owner, just drop us a line at thepetdoctor@petliferadio.com. I'll answer your questions and or have a show that talks all about it. So please stay tuned for next week. We'll give you more information again on how to make you the perfect pet owner. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.